Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
The beans posted a late week rally. We'll try to find out if 850 is in the offing for the November contract. That'll happen today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Greg Wagner of Horizon Ag Strategies. He's located at the Chicago Board of Trade. Our panelists today are Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Let's open the discussion with this question. Are November soybeans poised to make a run at 850, and should producers wait until then to begin pricing some of their expected new crop inventory? We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson.
Well, there's a good chance they can get there, Todd. But will we wait till then to price any? No, because we priced some today. We did our first 10% today when they went through $8. We'll look again, and we will look ahead. But very strong closes, very strong technically. And it looks like the government and the attitude has changed a little bit towards the biofuels, the way they voted on some things. And we've got a very good shot.
Mike Georgie of Allendale.
I'll have to agree. I wouldn't wait till 850, though. At $8 here, I think we bought some puts and sold some calls against the price to protect the bottom and to leave the top side open because who knows where it's going.
Man, Kurt Kimmel.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark. You got to be a scale-up seller or some type of marketing, protect your downside. But 850, they're not going to stop there. They're going a lot higher yet.
And speaking of those numbers from the soybeans and higher, here's the way they finished for the week at the Chicago Board of Trade. A high in the March contract at $7.57. They're low at $7.33¾. Settlement price at $7.49¼ in the March beans. They were up 12.5 cents from last Friday's close. November contract at $8.01, up 11¼. The USDA releasing its numbers this morning for the carryover and global carryout and some production highlights. We'll go through the numbers very quickly. Beans at 595 million bushels for the 06-07 ending stocks. That's up from the 575 in January. Corn stayed the same at 752 million, and the wheat stayed the same at 472 million bushels. What did you make of the opening of the market after those numbers came out on Friday
morning? Well, I thought the opening was it was up overnight, so it kind of went with the overnight trade. But I think what really was the catalyst for this thing going up again was the crude oil market. Crude oil was up over a dollar. And the corn and beans came along with it, and the crude settled lower, and then the beans and corn came off the highs.
This is an awfully big carryout for the soybeans?
Record amounts. We haven't had these carryouts since back in the mid-'80s there, records. But looking down the road, that carryout can change in a hurry. If we lose anywhere from 6 to 8 million acres and put that in the supply-demand balance sheet and we have any type of weather, you can take carryout down to 250 million bushels in a snap.
But it's at this 575 or 595 at this time. And I have all three of you saying, well, we started pricing at $8, but we're really not going too far until we get a little higher up in the marketplace. Is there any real concern that beans might fall out of bed at some point based on just this one carryout number?
On just this one carryout number? No, Todd, not on that. But that should be a feeling that it is because it is a great big number. We do have lots of beans right now. And there is no shortage for a while. We are concerned about how many acres come out of beans and Gwen. But we're looking at the Mid-South, and we're hearing people down there tell us, I'm going to quit planting cotton. I'm going to quit planting rice. I'm going to plant $8 beans, and I'm going to plant some corn. So I think we're going to take some acres from cotton. I think we're going to take some from rice. And I'm not sure we're going to take as many acres into the corn as especially what Pro Farmer thinks. I'm more in the camp from the 7.5 million acres increase.
Global carryout on the beans at 57.43 million metric tons. That's up at from the 56.15 million metric tons in January. On the corn, global carryout at 87.95 million metric tons, up from the 86.44 that was released in January. Once again, the carryout for corn now at just 752 million bushels. Corn futures had a high this week at 409.75 in the March. Their low at 391.5. A settlement price up 4.25 cents at 406.25 for the March. December futures 399.25, and they're up 2. Are we headed back to the highs in the corn market?
The near-term highs. I think corn's still in consolidation pattern here for a while. Report continues to show tight supplies. We'll have to watch day-to-day demand because actually the end user is pretty well booked up in most cases. But I think it's consolidation. The highlight will be the acreage report. I think we get into March, that'll tell the story whether we go into higher or not.
Do we know any better this week than last week about this acreage report and what things will look like? We've been talking about this son of a gun for 3 I get it. No, anybody know any better than last week what we were doing on acreage? No, not really. What should we say about this acreage report that's coming up?
We should say that it's going to be the most important report of the year, and it's also the most inaccurate of the government reports that we have when we end up with things, because things do change as we move along. We do know that there is a great advantage to planting corn. We also know that at $8 beans, we're seeing a lot of people that are not willing to switch their rotation, not willing to put their eggs into a basket that says the elevator might be full, I might not be able to get it out, and a lot of guys had a wet spring. I think the one thing more that we need to look at are long-term weather forecasts. Are not looking rosy for everything. I mean, they're not terrible, but they're not ideal by any means. So we're talking about a little bit of a wet spring. That means we might not get the corn plant as fast. And we're looking at a little bit of dry summer. So lots of things to still discuss. That's why we aren't priced a big percentage yet.
You know, there are a lot of things that still to discuss. As you said, farmers last year got on their horse. They got things sold fairly early. They have a short memory sometimes. They're looking at prices that are a lot better than they were last spring at this point. Do they need to stay on that horse making sales?
I believe so. I mean, you're looking at some profitable levels here. You got to start locking that in. I'm not saying sell the whole crop, but you got to scale into it. You know, as mentioned before, the basic way to protect your downside and leave your upside open is a put option. All years to buy a put. This is the year we believe you need to do it. But this thing can turn in a hurry. You've got probably a dollar downside risk in corn. If this corn market would turn south, it could drop in a hurry. If you raise 170 bushels the acre, that's 170 bushel downside risk. If you raise 1,000 acres of corn, that's $170,000 downside risk. The risk to the downside for a producer. Now, as a trader, it's a whole different story. So you need to have some type of marketing plan, stick with it.
We are on the 9th day of February, a short month, and by the end of the month, the crop insurance rates will be set. Are we far enough in at a high enough price that you can take a look at the insurance and get a good idea where premiums are going to be and how much farmers might be able to lock in off of those this season?
Not really yet, Todd. We're going to have to look. We know it's going to be higher this year. We're insuring Lincoln Continentals rather than a beat-up Ford pickup truck this year as far as the crop goes, and along with that. But I think one thing we have to remember is it's going to cost about the same amount of bushels per acre. And if it was a good idea to have insurance last year, the year before, or the year before that, this year we can actually insure levels where we can make money if we collect on that insurance and not just be able to come back and farm next year, but make a profit. So I think it's something they want to consider. There's a lot of things to look at this year. It's not quite the same it was in the past because it's going to be a lot of dollars per acre, especially if you take the RA insurance, which that has the unlimited upside or unlimited downside as far as figuring it come fall, where CRC's only has $1.50 flex. That might cost you as much as $5 to $8 an acre more.
Mike, on the hard facts, the fundamentals, besides the USDA report that was released this week, anything that you saw come out of any place, out of China, out of Brazil, about their crop, about what they're exporting that made a difference in your mind this week?
Well, I think it's not as a bullish of a report as what it could have been. I mean, they did not change the ending stocks. They increased yield for Brazil and Argentina on their corn estimate. So, I mean, it you know, it's telling me that you gotta worry about the downside because, I mean, it is a different type market. The crude oil market definitely has an important aspect of the corn with the ethanol and the soy diesel and the soy oil with the beans. So, I mean, there's definitely a demand and there's other things that are holding this price up. So the report really wasn't that bullish as what the market did act on today.
The March wheat futures in Chicago, 470 and a half high, the low at $4.49. They were off a penny this week at 460 and a quarter. Settlement price for the July at $4.83, down a quarter of a cent for the harvest month. And the March oats, 250 and a half, were off 7 3/4 for the week. A little bit further down in the wheat pit, not much this week. Are they going to have to rally at some point, do you think?
Well, they're going to have to stay in competitive position with corn and beans. What's going through the producers' minds now is that, if wheat doesn't green up good or it's not looking good, they're going to convert that to corn. So I think it's going to follow suit somewhat. July wheat back up towards the $5 area. I think you got to give it a serious look of hedging some wheat or marketing some wheat, though.
Taking a look at the livestock numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, the February live cattle finished at 93.20. They were up $2.25 this week. The feeder cattle March contract at 98.77 and a half were 3.15 higher. Lean hogs February contract to 66.27 and a half. Settlement price up 92 and a half. And the Feb bellies at 102.77 and a half were down $1.20. Livestock producers squeezed hard enough. Will there be rationing at the $4 range in corn and the $8 range in beans?
Well, that's the fear of a higher corn prices and meal in general. Actually, when you look at meal, it's not too bad. If you talk to your processor there, you're actually $4, $5, $6 under, so you can still book some cash meal fill relatively easy. But the function of the market, if you look at the deferred contracts, is to keep those higher to discourage producers from liquidation.
Well, Todd, we saw the the cutouts on hogs go up drastically at the end of the week, which is good. We need that. The hog farmer can't use the DGGs to feed like some of the cattle people can, so we need to keep the hog person in business. We also saw a terrible spread between the futures and the cash on the cattle there right towards the end of trading. A lot of the guys that use puts to try to protect themselves weren't being helped by them, and we'd like to see that market just be monitored a little better so those would work.
We'll return in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Greg Wagner of Horizon Ag Strategies.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The coldest air of the past several winters plunged into Illinois this week. Temperatures averaged 10 to 20 degrees below normal this week, with the coldest weather last weekend and again on Tuesday. High temperatures across much of northern and central Illinois did not make it out of the single digits with several mornings of sub-zero readings. Sub-zero temperatures were reported as far south as I-70 on Monday morning. Over the deeper snow cover in northern Illinois, low temperatures reached as low as 15 to 20 degrees below zero. Strong winds added to the chill, producing wind chill readings as low as 25 below zero and prompting wind chill advisories for much of the state earlier this week. The big weather maker this week was the Alberta Clipper, which brought a swath of 2 to 7 inches of snow to much of central and northern Illinois. Snow now covers the ground across the northeastern half of the state, and it is not likely to go anywhere anytime soon. Temperatures will remain rather cold through next week, although there could be some brief warming in southern Illinois Monday into Tuesday as a weather system moves into the Ohio Valley. However, that system, which could bring some snow to central and northern Illinois, will pull in more cold air in its wake. That will bring temperatures back to below normal levels for the remainder of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mohammed, Illinois, and Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest today is Greg Wagner. He's the Director of Marketing and Risk Management for Horizon Ag Strategies. The company serves a diversified base of grain, livestock, dairy, and poultry producers. He's located in Chicago. Thanks for joining us, Greg. We appreciate it.
Hi, good afternoon.
Tell me how your livestock producers are faring in the face of high grain and oilseed input costs.
Well, One of the things is that we did forward. I got very aggressive back in the fall as far as making sure that people got covered both in the cash and if they needed to in the future. So personally, I think we're taken care of pretty well in that regard. And one of the things that snuck up here was a meal, not the meal, but obviously your protein cost. The meal hasn't been prohibitive given the price. It's really the corn that's really come into play here, but we're pretty well covered. And I think people still have to take coverage going forward. If you look at, history where we're at $4 corn. It is the second week in February. We have a whole growing season in front of us. If you look at what happened, Todd, back in 95, 96, the amount or the price rationing, in order for demand to get rationed, price has to go to pretty high levels. That's the template. That's the history. And if we get into a situation, whether it be a wet spring, unanticipated surge in demand, whatever the case, and you get high prices, obviously we could go a lot higher from where we're at now. And those people who aren't covered are obviously going to be hurt.
You know, we know how we could cover last year. We had lower prices through the year into the fall and talk about all this ethanol expansion, which gave us the idea that we should probably buy those calls for feeders.
Right. But
we're sitting at these levels now. How, if I'm an ethanol plant, how if I'm a feeder? There aren't any deals out there.
Well, there are not any deals unless they're only deals in hindsight. In other words, if you're looking and trying to price with premium and trying to factor in let's say, is this a fair value for this particular option? Particularly if you're looking at the volatility is going to get greater as time goes on. So, again, if you're looking at the second week in February, which we're at, corn's at $4. Will a call that you buy today in 6 to 8 weeks from now look cheap? And that's, I think, how you have to approach it is your ultimate risk, your downside. If we break, we break, and you're the benefit of it. But if we go up, clearly you have to take some sort of coverage.
So you're talking about the end user, you know, taking protection with the possibility of going higher. What's your feelings on the grain producer? I mean, what do you feel his risks are for the downside, or do you feel that the downside isn't there yet?
Yeah, well, probably anything could happen. An outlying event, whether it be bird flu. I mean, this is what I'm looking at. You could have bird flu. You could have some sort of unspeakable catastrophic event, which would cause, a break in prices, whether it be financial or a terrorist or whatever the case may be. So there's always downside risk here, but the downside risk won't be as great until we get further along into get an idea of what our acreage is, get an idea of what the weather is. I think we have very limited downside risk, and that's because of the demand base. And, you know, we're out of kilter. The supply demand is out of kilter. It was interesting to see that despite the fact that the USDA did not touch the balance sheet here domestically for the U.S., and they raised that the production down in Brazil and down in Argentina by a total of 6 million metric tons, and they passed that along with increased exports. They didn't cut our exports. So what is going on with the thinking as far as that demand base goes? I think that was kind of interesting. And there's the other shoe to drop here is with ethanol. They have said so much. I mean, the chief economist of the USDA testified before the U.S. Senate back in September and said, our ethanol numbers are wrong. We're going to redo them this winter. And presumably those numbers will come out next Wednesday, the 14th, when the USDA releases their baseline projections. And they'll revise the corn used for ethanol, both for 07 and 08. So those numbers should be posted to the Office of the Chief Economist's website sometime, my understanding is about 2 o'clock Central Time on Valentine's Day. And the USDA is likely to revise the domestic ethanol usage number as well. I'm personally in the camp, you know, you could see maybe trim another 100 million bushels off the ending stock. So there is downside risk, but you have to be able to come out here and make some, you know, pricing as far as beans and corn as well.
Well, Greg, as an end user, as a feeder, what type of strategy would you use? Would you by the board, by calls, or a combination? Or
as far as if you're feeding cattle, or if you're feeding hogs, you're feeding poultry, depending upon individual circumstances, people have a different, you know, different capitalization, different tolerance for risk, different ways to operate. So I take that by on a case-by-case basis. But I do feel that despite the fact that premiums have gone up in both the corn and soybeans, all these call options with not only the price levels but the volatility, volatility is going to go even higher with time. So the relative price of the options, you have to keep in mind they're not going to get cheaper as we go on into spring. It's going to get more expensive. We had a 12-cent range today in corn. We had a 20-cent range in the soybeans. And here you see things like where they raised the ending stocks for soybeans 20 million bushels. What would have happened today if they cut them 20 million?
Just looking ahead here, everybody has their own ideas of how many acres are going to be switched to corn and how many are going to be taken from beans. What are your personal thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a skeptic. I'm a skeptic. I'm on the fence, but I'm still skeptical about our ability. I'm not there yet with the 10 million acre thing theme. You could maybe see 7. You see the acreage, obviously it's going to be coming out of cotton and like was mentioned earlier, rice. There's going to be a shift in acreage, there's no doubt, but I'm not there. I can't. I'm working on numbers. I'm talking to people. I cannot come out and say that, you know, we're going to have this huge jump, 11 million. People are talking 10, 11 million acres. I don't think it's doable.
What do you base that skepticism in? Is it historical or some other just?
Well, part of it is historical. Part of it is based on conversations I've had, trying to get a feel or a sketch of things. And I know there's a lot of anecdotal stories about seed sales and equipment sales and et cetera, and fertilizer. There's a great deal of that around. But also, if you look at the, it is probably doable. I'm a skeptic right now.
Where are you at? 5, 6,
3?
Maybe
6, 7, probably 7, somewhere in the 6 to 7 range, I think, right now. And a lot of this is going to have to do with weather. And even if we get the acreage, then we have to deal with yield. It's going to be very interesting this year.
The last time you were on, and I was thinking about why we didn't get around to talking to you too much about the markets, and I want to come back to them. But I think we had a discussion with you, I'm fairly certain, the last time you were here about the index funds and the way they were playing in the market that week. That would have been early in January.
Yes.
And not long after that, the CFTC changed the way its commitment of traders report worked.
Yes.
We also had a discussion with you about the electronic trade. Has anything from your vantage point there at the Chicago Board of Trade changed either on the electronic trade? Has it gotten better and more capable in the last month and a half? And has the report from CFTC that separates out the index funds helped?
I think it's helped to the extent that there's transparency. Anytime there's transparency, it's a value to the market as a whole. But the fact is there's not a lot of history to the report. So you have to, because of the lack of an institutional history, so to speak, what do you compare those numbers against where we were before? And I think you could do some mathematical modeling and say, here's a, probably the commercial aspect of this long-only index fund. This was that percentage of the prior reported as a commercial position.
Have you sold any new crop corn or beans yet? And if you have, how much percentage?
Oh, we're looking at 20%.
Okay, yes. And where will your next
corn
sale be made?
Corn and beans, absolutely.
Where will you make your next sale?
We'll give it a price and time frame. I haven't set any definitive parameters. But it's likely I would get, if we pop this thing some more, I'm going to get increasingly aggressive.
Well, what about the bean side? I mean, we had probably one of the most bearish fundamental reports this morning.
Isn't that amazing?
But yet you're talking $8.
Isn't that amazing? And you could have, what would have happened? I said, what would have happened? We come in 26 million bushels over what the trade guesses, and beans go and close above $8. Whether or not this is like a phantom trade, I don't know, but it clearly indicates that there's a lot of money in the market, and you certainly can make the case when you take a look at some of the balanced supply-demand tables, given a sharp contraction in acreage and a weather problem, you could see a justification for prices being where they're at.
Do you see any good fundamental reasons for the market to try to do this? Is there that much biofuels capacity in the offing somewhere down the line? Is the livestock side going to be short domestically? What do you see?
I don't see the biofuels per se. I mean, it's down the line, but immediately I think when you're looking basically at raw numbers that would suggest that if you get a dramatic contraction in soybean acreage at the expense, with that acreage going to corn, you're doing two things. Number one, you're taking the acreage out, which is probably the better land. So you're going to have the effect of a yield drag on acreage, and then you have a net effect on the total production side. And then if you look at the contraction, what could become a contraction in U.S. acreage, then can South America actually make that acreage up? And that's really doubtful, you know. They just can't come in and throw another 7 million acres of soybeans in year over year. I don't think they're set up to do that right now. So then we're looking at a whole global, you throw in that whole biofuels equation, the biodiesel, and then, you know, you've got a pretty dynamic story.
Greg, we appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, it's great.
Greg Wagner, you're welcome. Greg Wagner is with Horizon Ag Strategies. You can find out more at www.horizonagstrategies.com. And now a final word from our panelist, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, I think he mentioned one of the big things that we're looking at, the big report next week, that baseline report that's going to give us some ideas of the ethanol usage production for the next 2 years.
And Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet.
Well, I think that's right. I think anything can happen. We can continue up. We can go down, and we're going to have to need some new news, positive or negative, to make this market move. I think we're trending sideways right now.
Man, Kurt Kimmel.
I agree with one of the statements made there. Volatility is just going to keep getting higher, not lower.
We appreciate it, gentlemen. Kurt Kimmel, of course, with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson joining us from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web, of course, is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at willuiuc.edu.